Hello, this is Lisa Hilgenberg from the Regenstein Fruit and Vegetable Garden at Chicago Botanic Garden. You're listening to 1590 WCGO, Chicago's Smart Talk. The Mike Novak Show starts in 3, 2, 1.
Live from a cul-de-sac somewhere in Evanston, Illinois, it's the Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. After 20 years, still Chicago's only deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Saturday morning on 1590 WCGO, Chicago's Smart Talk.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Whoa. Good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
They're sometimes called the odd couple, if only because the word aberrant doesn't fit in the logo. Here they are, Peggy Malecki and Mike Novak.
Half forests, the wetlands, well, good planets are in the main.
Right. Hey, good morning. Look at this. We are in the confines of 1590 WCGO. What, are you all right?
No.
Your microphone is drooping, baby. I don't want to get into... There are pills for that, but...
Stay.
Woof. There you go. Much better. See?
It was at Robbie Height. You know,
if I'm the microphone, I'm paying attention to you because Peggy will... Will knock you flat if you don't pay attention to her. So
wait a minute.
With just a look, you don't even have to physically do that. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be anywhere, but in the studio after 2 weeks on the road, I have to admit, as much as I enjoy getting out there and having fun with audiences and being on the road, there's a lot of setup and there's a lot of work and. There's a lot of trepidation to make sure the signal's coming through mm-hmm. and all of that. So it's nice to just turn it over to Ben and have him hit the dials and have us do all the talking. But here we are once again, and welcome to April. Thank goodness that French and Friends didn't do a thing for our show. Because
not that we know of.
That's true. If they did, it will take up half the program because all we get is an hour right
yes.
now still. So I'm kind of hoping
that's the
I'm crossing my
April Fools.
That's the April Fool joke on us is we actually have 2 hours that we haven't budgeted for. Yay! Okay. Today on the program, we're very pleased. We just got one guest. Well, two, if you count Rick DeMille Weather, and of course Rick will be here with us later. And you tell me he. Might be on Fox News tomorrow?
Possibly. We can ask him about it.
Okay. All right. Back on TV. Good for him. I heard a report earlier that I want to talk to him about peaches. A peach grower in the area was saying that the peaches, and the news report was very funny because the news report said the peaches survived the cold. Well, it's not the
actual peaches.
Peach. No, it's the blossom.
Yes.
And apparently the blossoms survived the warm mm-hmm. up in earlier in the year and then the cold afterwards. So apparently the blossoms made it through and even the peach growers kind of surprised.
They're all going,
at it.
Phew.
No kidding. So that's good news. And maybe mm-hmm. We should do a little more research. In fact, if anybody's listening and they've got news on that, give us a call at 847-475-1590. Give us a peach report. Give us the apple report. It's probably too early for apples to be blooming in the area. But again, Mother Nature has...
It's been a weird year.
So. ...has played havoc with us. So it has been just an odd mm-hmm. year. So on the program today, Rick DeMille at the usual time towards the end of the hour. But Carl Zimmering, who's sitting there very patiently right now, you're in a is an assistant or an associate professor?
I'm an associate professor, and soon the word associate will be knocked off, and they'll just call me professor.
Ooh. Really? Yes. Give that man a ding. All right. It's about time. And some places use associate, some use assistant, and I'm sure it all in the hierarchy, it's all very important.
Yeah, it's very important to everyone who's not listening to the radio. They could not care less. I teach kids about waste.
Which is amazing, yeah. Okay? He teaches people, teaches kids about waste. He's written books on waste. He talks about recycling. Today we're talking about his book, Aluminum Upcycled. It might not sound industry interesting, I guarantee.
Definitely industry.
It is industry, though.
But it's interesting industry. Interesting
industry. I can't even say it. So stick around for that. That is our conversation today. Meanwhile, your family and friends, both the two-legged and four-legged kinds, spend a lot of time in public parks, schoolyards, and on your own lawn. You want those grounds to be not only beautiful, but safe. That's where Logic Lawn Care comes in. They're a brand new sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. We're very pleased to have them on the program. Logic is an Evanston-based company with almost a decade of experience of successfully creating beautiful lawns naturally with organic fertilizers and natural weed controls. Logic works with homeowners on the North Shore, but also with schools, park districts, and municipalities across Chicagoland to manage their large turf areas naturally. Get a free estimate Monday. Go to logiclawncare.com or call 847-421-6500.
You need to know about the Sugar Beet Food Co-op. The Sugar Beet is a community-owned grocery store in Oak Park, open to everyone, featuring local and organic products, and we'd like you to give them a try. Mention the Mike Novak Show, you'll get $5 off any purchase of $15 or more. Sugar Beet Food Co-op is at 812 Madison, just west of Oak Park Avenue in Oak Park, and online at sugarbeet.coop. That's sugarbeet.coop.
If you live in the upper Midwest and you're already jonesing to plant stuff, you need to get your hands on a grow light from Happy Leaf LED. At 18 inches, it's small but mighty. You can start three conventionally sized flats of seeds in a roughly 3 by 2 foot area. You can even grow plants that flower and produce fruit. How does Happy Leaf do it? The light is tuned for all plant growth, including flowering plants. You name it, this USA-made LED light can grow it. Your indoor garden will be limited only by your imagination. It's already won the 2017 Direct Gardening Association Green Thumb Award. With the Happy Leaf LED, there's no reason you can't have your own delicious, fresh, leafy greens year-round, not to mention all of the herbs you need for any recipe. Find out more about the Happy Leaf LED light at happyleafled.com or call 815-414-2209. Happy Leaf, it's about the light.
Have you ever walked into a hair salon and been overwhelmed by the smell of chemicals? That's never going to happen at Organic Roots Eco Salon. They use only the safest, most natural, professional hair care products available to make sure you get exceptional color results that last and won't harm the environment or you. Their products and services are free from ammonia, formaldehyde, and other toxins ordinarily found in hair color, perms, and keratin smoothing treatments. Organic Roots offers non-toxic, vegan-friendly nail services. They've also just introduced a complete menu of natural hair care services for textured hair of all lengths. And how many salons do you think repurpose hair clippings, recycle product containers, and use LED lighting? Walk into 21st century hair care for women and men at Organic Roots Eco Salon, 3417 Dempster in Skokie. Book your appointment at organicrootsecosalon.com or call 847-423-2653. Health and beauty. You no longer have to sacrifice one for the other.
What is this place?
You're in uncharted territory.
What do you mean? Where are we?
I don't know if you've heard this.
I don't know what it is.
Tell us your name, please.
1590. WCGO Chicago.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki, and very pleased to have in the studio Carl Zimmering, soon to be a full professor.
And currently an April Fool.
April Fool. You weren't kidding me when you said they were going to take away the assistant from the beginning. You were?
Oh, no, I haven't been an assistant for all. I'm associate now. They are going to take
associate.
Away the associate.
Yeah, associate. Yeah. All right, what's the difference between assistant and associate professor?
A few thousand bucks.
Ah, okay. See, yeah. For me, I always
there's just... other stuff, but that's the stuff that really matters.
Right, exactly.
When I was back in Chicago, the last time I was on your show, I was an assistant professor. Way back when.
Way back in the day when you were editing a book on an
encyclopedia,
of waste. And since then you wrote Clean and White, A History of Environmental Racism in the United States. And I have to tell you, we are going to do a show about that topic. I have been working on this and talking to people for a couple of years. And the idea of how we bring people of color into the environmental world. And, you know, not that there aren't. There aren't enough.
But sustaining a conversation.
Right. And because they're affected more than anybody else, as your book points out. And I want folks in this room to talk about it and have a knockdown drag out about what this is all about. You know, Peggy and I went to a meeting last week, and I won't say for what, but it was an environmental group, and there were a sea of white faces in the room. Mm-hmm. And I found...
And older.
Older white face. And that's the other thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the environmentalists are older. They're coming out of the 60s and 70s.
And again, in Chicago, there are people of color who are talking about environmental things, like the Little Village Environmental Justice Group, whose chair, Kim Wasserman, I just talked to a couple nights ago.
Ah.
Great stuff.
Wasn't she a keynote this week? Or?
Yeah, she was at my organization. Yeah, and I think she's probably done some other stuff. Her, Sylvia Hood Washington, there's some great people in Chicago. The question is getting people together to have the conversation and mobilize.
She's going to be one of the people I want to get in on that conversation.
Would be great, because we've got a lot of need for that, not just at the local level, but at the national level.
Well, let's start local.
Yes.
Let's see what
we
can do local first, because that's the way it's going to go.
Absolutely.
For a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Carl's latest book is Aluminum Upcycled, Sustainable Design in Historical Perspective. And you can see my little bookmarks in here. I took
lots of little yellow legs popping all over the book.
My cat was like flipping at them while I'm trying to read.
Cat enjoy the book.
I got little Kindle marks all over mine. So
I did enjoy the book. I really enjoyed the book. Mm-hmm. I learned so much about it. As I wrote to you, I learned more about aluminum than I thought was even possible. And what I love about the book is that you weave in recycling in general and sustainability in general. You even bring in the arts. Guitar. You got a whole chapter here about aluminum guitars.
A lot of Chicago artists use the aluminum neck guitars.
And what I was amazed by with the aluminum guitars is how hard it is to construct them and how few of them were actually ever built.
At least the ones in the 70s.
Yeah.
It took a lot of time to do it.
But those are the classic ones.
Yeah.
Right.
Although they're now making newer ones in some parts with those designs, and we have more aluminum guitars than ever before, but none of them are cheap. And Pete Townsend, if he tried to destroy them, they would destroy him.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. No, people have tried.
Well, you could take out your amplifier with it.
You could take out all sorts of things with it, including your bassist. So be careful if you're using an aluminum guitar.
You were talking about once they put them back together after they broke them.
Yeah, indestructible.
When they tried to break them?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Steve Albini, who has the electrical audio studio down on Belmont, he actually managed to, with one of these old guitars that has an aluminum neck but had a wood body, he somehow managed to split the wood part of the body on stage about a decade or so ago. So they repaired it by putting a big aluminum pan on the back of it, and the thing will now outlive Steve and me and everyone in this room.
And even parrots and turtles,
yes.
Right? Okay. But that's not even the main focus of the book.
Yeah.
You talk about the rise of aluminum. I'm going to let you do it in your own words. I mean, I could parrot stuff from the book, speaking of parrots. But I want you to talk about why aluminum is a 20th century phenomenon.
Sure. Well, and during the transition, we were talking about the fact that there are aluminum ladders that we use on houses and stuff.
Right.
And why do we use aluminum ladders? What's the point of doing that
I know. Yeah. They're light.
Yeah. They're light, but they're also durable, because you could have a ladder made out of balsa wood. You people at home can't see me, but my body is not going to hang out with a balsa wood ladder. Aluminum is light, malleable, durable. And the other cool thing about an aluminum ladder, if you're using it on the outside of the house, you're in Chicago, it's March, April, you might have rain and snow, it doesn't rust. There is some aluminum corrosion. It's an incredibly durable material. So it's fantastic for making ladders out of. You can put aluminum siding out of it.
But okay, let me interject here. But what I thought I read, because you talked about it in early in the 20th mm-hmm. century being used for airplanes because it was durable and light, but it tended to, dissolve, flake something? It didn't hold together as well as it.
Well, the process to make aluminum is kind of tough. And one of the reasons we didn't use much aluminum before World War II is it comes from an element that's in the Earth's crust. It's one of the most abundant ones called bauxite, which is really rocky. And the amount of energy required to turn that into that nice, smooth, durable metal is a lot. And if you didn't have enough, you might have inferior aluminum that could flake and fall apart. But because we developed massive amounts of electricity, not just in the United States, Soviet Union, all over the world, in part to make the planes that drop bombs all over the world in World War II, we suddenly started mass producing this metal so we'd have enough to fight the war. And once the war was over, we had the energy capacity to mass produce it, and we made all sorts of crap out of it. And I say crap because it was crap. You have Reynolds Wrap. That's aluminum foil. You've got beer
cans. Wait, how can you say Reynolds Wrap is crap?
Well, because here's the reason why it's crap. All that energy was making this wonderful material. You use it. You've got your pot roast in it. You take it out. You cook it. Then you throw your Reynolds Wrap away.
I reuse it as much as I can until it falls apart, and then I throw it in the recycling bin.
Mike, you were so much better than most of the people in the 1950s who just tossed it in the trash.
Well, but that was the mentality. You know what? And that's another point in your book, which is the manufacturers of all these products did it without thinking about the end use of the product. And this was our mindset for decades. I guess you could say
it's still our mindset
abundance mentality.
Yep. Got it. It's cheap. Why would we need to keep it around? Why would we need to reuse it? Why would we need to do more with less? We didn't think that. We just thought, let's create more of this stuff.
But it wasn't cheap. I mean, that's the other thing that you point out, the contradiction of mining bauxite. And one of the things you say in the book is that aluminum is the most abundant metal found in the Earth's crust. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's all over the world. So, I mean, I used to work up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and that was a big place for mining because copper was found there.
Right.
Copper's only found in a few places in, real volume. Whereas bauxite, if we wanted to open a bauxite mine next to the studio, we probably could, though the good people of Evanston would not be happy about that.
So is it everywhere? Is that the point?
It's in most of the Earth's crust. And so a lot of the engineers who talk about sustainability talk about aluminum and steel as being materials that we don't have to worry about running out of, that we can also...
Because iron is everywhere, too?
There's a lot of iron in the Earth's crust, too, although not quite as easy to find as bauxite. But we don't worry about iron shortages the way we worry about rare earth or, phosphorus, for those of you who are gardeners who are worried about the food system.
Uh-huh. In many places, we have too much phosphorus.
Well, yeah, we're throwing phosphorus away.
Yes,
we're
throwing it into the ground, and it's ending up in our lakes and streams.
Creating dead zones, and just a terrible, terrible ecological disaster. And these are some of the things
we talk about, too. Well, everything's an ecological disaster. So is bauxite.
It is.
You say that it's really difficult to extract, and it takes a toll on the environment.
I mean, it's a material we have to mine out of the earth, so we're creating these huge holes in there, and sometimes we're putting mercury and cyanide into the place, so that gets on the water table. So in places like Jamaica, where we have intensive bauxite mining, it's been terrible for the environment. And then we have to
I want to say, not in my yard, man.
There is whose yard will it be in? That
yes,
is a big
in Jamaica,
question.
Man, that's
and
fine.
And this relates to the environmental racism we were talking about at the top of the show.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly. It gets back to that point.
And then you have to use a lot of energy to turn that rocky red stuff into the smooth gray metal, and that then also produces fumes, including dioxins. Mm-hmm. And there's runoff that gets into the water table, too. So making primary aluminum is actually really hard on the environment.
And yet as you point out, there was a period where we mined all of this bauxite, processed all of this aluminum, used it in our wars because that was – and that's what we always do. Mm-hmm. Witness ammonium nitrate, which was discovered about the same time – well, a little later than the extraction process for bauxite, but 1909. Haber-Bosch process, ammonium nitrate. What did we first use it for? Bombs. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fertilizer, that came after two world wars. And people said, well, we got all this ammonium nitrate. What do we do with it? I know. Let's use it for fertilizer. And wars tend to create or result in the creation of products.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we have to find a market.
And we do. And so if you drink a beverage today, some of them are in aluminum cans. Many of them are in plastic cans. Where did we get plastic from? World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them came because suddenly the United States didn't have access to rubber tree plants in the South Pacific. They created artificial rubber to use for tires and motor fan belts. And then after the war, all this plastic stuff comes out, too.
Uh-huh. By the way, that's Carl A. Zimmering. He is the author of Aluminum Upcycled, Sustainable Design in Historical Perspective. We are talking about that and related subjects. If you have a question, 847-475-1590, 847-475-1590. We would love to hear from you. You can get a copy of the book by going to my website, mikenovak.net. We've got a link to it, and it is published by
Johns Hopkins University Press out of the good city of Baltimore, Maryland.
And they will appreciate that because I know that your press agent is going to be listening at least to the podcast.
Yes, so. And probably also wants us to mention that I'll be back in town at the end of the month and I can sign copies for this at the Chicago Humanities Festival.
That's
April
right.
29.
You're going to be speaking at the Humanities Festival on the 29th of April.
Exactly, because their theme for their Spring Fest is stuff, and I'm talking about the stuff we throw away.
Gosh. But this week you're also in town for another conference. What's that?
That one's the American Society for Environmental History. So we were talking a lot about what we're throwing away. The environmental racism dimension we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier has been a big theme throughout this conference. And that's been going well. I've been getting up frightfully early to do talks. And I'll be there after I leave the show for the last day and a half of it. It's been a lot of fun.
Except you're in Eastern time. We're in Central, so you're sleeping.
Yeah,
in.
But I am not a morning person. So I teach at a design and art school where I teach artists. And my first class is at 2 p.m.
Yay!
And it takes me some coffee to do that. Yes.
I remember in college a 9 a.m. course that I had, and it was a seminar thing, and we all sat in a big circle, mm-hmm. and the professor was in the circle with us, and I would proceed to fall asleep. And I'd have my coffee on the table, on the desk, and a donut, and I would just nod off, and the guy next to me would, like, bump me, and he goes, "The professor's looking at you." I'm like, "Yeah, so..." I'm sorry.
Welcome
I'm
to my life every single week, Mike. And I can't get too angry because when I was in college, I once slept through my first class of the day, which doesn't sound so bad until you realize it was at 4 p.m.
Whoops.
Yes.
Well, see, now the shoe is on the other foot.
Indeed. It comes back to bite us. Much like all of our ecological decisions come back to bite us in the end.
Ooh, yes. Nice touch.
I like that.
This
nice
segue.
This is what
segue. I think about all the time.
Well, you do. And before we get to the next part of our discussion, speaking of that, you are a member of the Chicago Recycling Coalition.
Indeed. Mike and I go way back.
Yeah, actually, I brought him on the board of the Chicago Recycling Coalition. And then when he moved to New York, I said, I'll let you go at some point, but not yet.
I'm still on the board.
I'm gone.
I'm like Charlie from Charlie's Angels just popping in over the phone at the meetings. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and what we will do in the second segment today is talk a little bit about Chicago as well and its recycling.
So much to say.
There really is, but we still haven't finished the discussion about aluminum because there's that whole issue of recycling mm-hmm. aluminum, which we haven't actually gotten to yet. We have just a minute or so here. Briefly, we discovered in the middle of the century that you could recycle aluminum, but it wasn't easy because it had been alloyed with a lot of different materials.
But by the late 1950s, it was fairly easy to find chemical processes to separate aluminum from mm-hmm. magnesium, zinc, all the things we could alloy with them to make them either thin or very thick. And by the end of the 50s, there was a fairly wide trade in recycling. And once you could do that, you could just melt it over and over again to have great, strong metal.
And my question to you, as I was thinking as I was reading the book, is some of the aluminum that was processed in the early part of the 20th century still in use?
There are engineers who talk about aluminum as a sustainable material and say that more than two-thirds of all aluminum made since 1900 is still in use.
Wow.
And this is one reason why it's argued as being a very sustainable material to produce with. And that's why I wrote the book. It's like, how sustainable is this? Let's talk about that.
We'll get into that. Carl Zimring will be back with Aluminum Upcycled. Some people actually get excited at a salad table. Really? No, I'm not kidding. Peggy, will you tell them I'm not kidding?
He's not kidding.
Thank you. And in the March-April edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, you can learn how to build your own salad table, a waist-high structure on legs that's deep enough for growing greens and other shallow-rooted plants while allowing water to drain through a mesh bottom. Did you know that there's even an official salad table design? Of course you don't. Not even Peggy knows that. Speaking of mesh bottoms, my column is on the inside back page of every issue. No, don't ask.
Wait, what? Whoa.
Don't ask. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines, on newsstands everywhere, or go to chicagolandgardening.com. If you're in other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. The Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. Carl Zimring is in the studio. Give us a call. We'll talk to you about aluminium. Stick around.
Ah, British.
You've got to love it.
Chicagoans are looking for ways to get healthier in 2017. Hi, I'm Peggy, and I publish Natural Awakening, Chicago's greenest and healthiest local magazine. And if you want to reach this growing wellness market, you need to get your business in front of our 80,000 monthly readers. Why? Because our advertisers tell us our targeted readers are committed to improving their health and taking action. They're looking for holistic wellness practitioners, integrative doctors and dentists, nutritionists, health and lifestyle coaches, yoga classes, green landscapers, even home improvement and energy efficiency experts. Our dedicated readers pick up their free copies each month from more than 1,100 locations throughout the city and suburbs because they know it's the best source for information about healthy, green living in Chicago. Call me today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. And check us out at nachicago.com. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
If you're looking to invest in an electrical car or truck, make sure to hire a state-licensed electrical contractor. The installation of that charger will require a permit in most municipalities. So make sure to check the ICC website for a certified contractor at icc.illinois.gov. You can also call DNR Services Unlimited. They've been a licensed electrical contractor since 1992. Visit their website at restorethenorthshore.com or give them a call at 847-998-1687. It'll be easy to find someone cheaper, but a lot harder to find someone better.
Chicagoans, use your blue carts to recycle. Bottles, flattened boxes, jugs with the lids on, tin and aluminum cans, juice cartons, and mail. No plastic bags, including store bags, no greasy pizza boxes, styrofoam, disposable coffee cups, light bulbs, napkins, electronics, or shredded paper. Put your items loose in the blue cart and not in a plastic bag. Visit recyclebycity.com/Chicago and let's make Chicago beautiful and green.
This is Sports Director Kevin Burgess. Make sure you catch my sports report every day from 5 to 7 p.m. on French and Friends, sponsored by 1090 Brewing.
We'll just play this forever. Okay. Now, it came up last week, too. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. Our guest is Carl Zimring, the author of Aluminum Upcycled, and we're learning all about aluminum today and why it was a very popular metal and continues to be a very popular metal. So we start with World War One, we go into World War Two, and it's used mainly for airplanes and what else?
Well, airplanes were really durable because then you could go faster and further on the same amount of fuel.
Right.
And with, you know, the war across the Pacific especially, that was a major thing. And so there's a big race to get more aluminum airplanes out. And of course all the airplanes we have here, I flew here in a big aluminum can on wings.
With a can opener. They give you a can opener.
It wasn't that big of a plane. It was one of those shuttle flights.
So after the war, as you write it in your book, there selling off all these planes, and they're being smelted down for scrap.
They're being scrapped, and again, they're cutting them up. They're no longer useful as vehicles anymore because there's wear and tear, and you don't want to be on a rickety old plane. You'd like to be on a new plane.
Except for some of those Cessnas that are 50 years old that are now collector's items.
Which I do talk about in the book a little bit. If you maintain them and people care about them, and they will maintain them. The Army, though, wanted to get new ones, and so they scrapped the old ones. They'd have them at auction, and scrap dealers would come, take them, tear them up, and melt them down and give them to industry, which turned them into all sorts of stuff.
So we're coming out of the war. We scrapped the airplanes to make commercial airliners first, but also then the experimentation starts. Can you build a car with it? Can you
create various things that you might have used more expensive materials for before with it? And so if you've ever seen the movie Tin Man is not about tin, it's about aluminum siding salesmen putting aluminum on the sides of houses. We use them to wire electricity in places, though it wasn't quite as good as copper. And we created things like beer cans out of them. We have the stuff we mined out of the ground, and let's open a can. 35 seconds later, we're done with it, and we can throw it away or maybe
recycle it. And that's the problem. That's what was going on in the 50s and into the 60s. What folks were told was, hey, you can just throw it away. What's the big deal? There was no thought given. Yeah.
Throw it out your car window while you're driving. And then eventually people got mad at all this litter. And so people like Budweiser and Coke said, you know, we have to do something about that. Let's invent this thing called the litter bug. It's your fault. We gave you this thing that was designed to be thrown away, but it's your fault for throwing it away.
And thus the birth of Keep America Beautiful. And I've known about this for several years. I'm so glad you wrote about this because it's so cynical in a way. All right. And I was talking to Kathleen about this, and she says, please tell me there's good news here. I said, there is good news. People recycle. The bad news is it was started as a propaganda campaign to take the onus away from the manufacturer and put it on the consumer. And that's the history of Keep America Beautiful. It's, hey, the manufacturers are the good guys, the consumer, ooh, you're bad, you're littering, you're a litter bug. So
How dare you?
Yes.
And it worked very well. Yeah, it worked phenomenally well. So the onus became the consumers go, we're mad about this, but they weren't mad at Pepsi so much. They then got mad at City Hall. And so cities had to start developing recycling collection programs, which there are more than 10,000 across the United States, and in some cities they actually work quite well. We have Chicago we can talk about. But before we do, should it really be the city's burden to do that, or shouldn't we have the manufacturers have extended producer responsibility? And in some places, I live in New York now, there's a deposit law for cans and bottles, because that's something that really improves recycling, and that's something that puts some onus on the producer to make it. We don't have that here, and it's because Keep America Beautiful fought that in many, many states.
Bottle laws continue to be controversial. I'm a member of the Illinois Recycling Association now. I left CRC to go to the IRA.
You've gone statewide.
I have. And bottle bills in Illinois are controversial, as they are throughout the country. There are some people who argue now that they're outdated, that because of the sophistication of collection these days, we don't need bottle bills anymore. What's your response to that?
No. That's the simple response, because we're producing more and more packaging that there's the requirements to do this. And one of the problems with a lot of our packaging is we have what I call mutant materials, where it's not just aluminum or it's not just plastic. It might be meldings of them, like condiment packets. If you ever get like ketchup packets at the baseball game, those are mixes of aluminum and plastic. How can you recycle that? It's too expensive.
Or most of the coffee bags if you buy beans at the store.
So, yeah, the sorting mechanisms at recycling facilities are more sophisticated, but so are the products they have to sort, and it makes it more and more
difficult.
It's
an industry, though. It's ways to make money.
It is an industry, but it's a commodity-based industry. Mm-hmm. It all depends on demand, and one of the problems recently is that the prices of recycled commodities have gone down, so it's more difficult, especially with glass, to get markets.
And something we need to point out to folks listening to this, it's not all unicorns and
rainbows.
Thank you. When you recycle stuff, because there is environmental degradation that goes on in the recycling process. Yeah. It's not as bad as mining the raw bauxite, but there are still problems with that. What are some of those problems?
Well, it's still an industrial process. So if I take a beer can and I drink it and then we have it go to a recycling center, it gets melted down. But aluminum's not the only thing on a beer can. There's a small plastic coating on the inside so the acid of the beverage doesn't eat through. There's enamel paint on the outside. When you melt that down, you will be producing off-gassing of various things, including dioxins.
Oh, dear.
So, exactly, because that's a carcinogen.
Right.
And so people who work in and around and live around recycling processing centers do have elevated levels of cancer. Again...
It's still somehow better than using the raw material.
Absolutely.
So
we are saving energy.
Now we have to weigh these things.
And again, recycling generally is better than mining stuff. Then the question is, why are we using more and more of this stuff? And why are we using them in disposable things that we have to reprocess in an industrial way rather than just wash it out? I mean, people in the 1930s drank milk that they got from dairies, but they got them in bottles that we washed out and reused.
Yes.
The throw-it-away mentality of design has really transformed to be a norm. So we now think, of course, we just put in that blue bin rather than that black bin, and everything will be fine.
Right, and we can walk away, and we have a clear conscience.
Out of sight and out of mind.
Mm-hmm. And that gets to the whole idea of manufacturer responsibility, as you said, extended... extended producer responsibility, EPR, you see that all the time. There's a fight going on in Illinois over the e-waste law right now because the manufacturers are trying to weasel out of their commitment because it costs them money. And again, we're trying to put it on the backs of the counties, put it on the backs of the consumers, anybody but the manufacturer.
And of course, the counties have so much money now that they can deal with this, so why not?
Especially in Illinois.
And the thing is, in Europe, they have the EU having strong EPR laws. And so what happens is manufacturers start to design their products to easily be disassembled or to live longer as a useful good. And so Germany doesn't have the waste problems we have.
So very briefly, because we're running out of time here, let's get to design.
Sure.
Very quickly, one of the big problems here is we do not design things, as we mentioned earlier, keeping in mind their end of life. And there's a wonderful book you mentioned in here, and I've read it, and Peggy and I both read it, Cradle to Cradle, which is a book that everybody needs to read.
It's made out of plastic.
It's made out of plastic. Mm-hmm. They had the design of the book in mind when they wrote it.
Great book to read in the bathtub because you can't destroy the paper.
Speaking from experience there?
Yes. Good poolside reading, too.
So how do we get people to design things smarter?
Well, I mean, part of this is just awareness of what the damage is of what we're doing. So, again, you were talking e-waste. Computers got all sorts of stuff in it. And separating that out to get the valuable materials means there's a lot of possible waste. Automobiles are the same thing. We got lead. We got acids in there. And thinking through about are there ways of designing the things that we really love in modern society that won't do them? There's a phrase called design for disassembly, which is really crucial. And Apple's done this with their computers. They used to have these plastic shells for their laptops that had adhesives, and it was really hard to go in and repair it, and you had to tear apart all this plastic to recycle it, and the plastics couldn't be recycled in there. They now use the aluminum bodies for that. It reduces the amount of adhesive, and it makes it a lot easier to take the computer apart, which is good.
So it's up to people like you, though, in the universities to teach your students that when you're designing this, think about what's going to happen ultimately to the product.
The whole reason I left Chicago, which is a great city, it's the best city in the world, for New York, is I teach design students, and I teach them about the consequences of both the raw materials they're using and what happens to their stuff after people have finished using them, so that they think about design for disassembly and using no toxins and not hurting people.
All right, we got about a minute. Recycling in Chicago. I saw a story. I know. Can you believe we got a minute to talk about this? But I just saw an article about how the city's doing a reach out program to the communities, a test community to see if they can educate people. And I know Chicago Recycling Coalition, because when I was president, one of the things we kept hammering the city about was education, education, education. What did they think that meant? Because now they're saying, well, you know, it takes a lot of work. It's almost like Donald Trump saying, nobody knew how hard this was going to be.
Healthcare was, yes.
Yeah.
And it's the same problem Chicago's had for years and years and years. I mean, you were battling the blue bag program.
Yeah.
About that. And longtime listeners know what that is. But Chicago's done a terrible job of communicating with the citizenry about what to put in, what the consequences of contaminating by putting garbage in recycling, and has not done a really good job of reaching out. But that's not just true of recycling. That's true of most things Chicago government has done with the citizenry.
Well, what I'm going to say is keep the pedal to the metal.
Yes.
Make them accountable. Let them know that, it's hard work. And guess what? It costs money to educate people. You have to spend it.
And let them know if your building's not recycling, because your building better give you recycling.
Carl Zimring, the author of Aluminum Upcycled. Go to my website, mikenovak.net, and you can find all the information. Thank you so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you much, Mike and Peggy. I really appreciate it. I'll be back April 29.
All right. We'll talk again. We're all itching to grow stuff outside in Illinois right now. Meanwhile, you need to know about the Sugar Beet Food Co-op, because the Sugar Beet is a community-owned grocery store in Oak Park, open to everyone, featuring local and organic products, and we'd like you to give them a try. Just mention the Mike Novak Show, and you'll get $5 off any purchase of $15 or more. The Sugar Beet Food Co-op is at 812 Madison, just west of Oak Park Avenue, and online at sugarbeet.coop. Sugarbeet.coop.
Is this the year you finally get your lawn off drugs? But why stop there? Why not work with your city, park district, and local schools to create a neighborhood of lawns that are beautiful and safe? Logic Lawn Care is an Evanston-based company with over 10 years' experience managing large turf areas naturally. Go to logiclawncare.com or call 847-421-6500 for a free estimate. 847-421-6500.
It's the Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. Meteorologist Rick DeMaio is next, so stick around.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynoch of Ninglador.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
Community-supported agriculture, or CSA, creates a direct relationship between you and a local farmer who grows your food.
You support a farmer financially up front, and your farmer provides you with local, sustainably raised food during the growing season.
This could be a weekly box of vegetables, a monthly share of meat or eggs, and there are many other options.
To find your farmer and the CSA that works best for you, go to bandoffarmers.org or check out the Chicagoland CSA Guide in the March issue of Natural Awakenings magazine.
This is Mike Novak. Chicagoans use your blue carts to recycle. Bottles, flattened boxes, mail, jugs with the lids on, tin and aluminum cans, and juice cartons. No plastic bags, including store bags. No greasy pizza boxes, styrofoam, disposable coffee cups, light bulbs, napkins, electronics, or shredded paper. Put your recyclables loose in the blue cart and not in a plastic bag. Visit recyclebycity.com/Chicago for more do's and don'ts. Let's make Chicago beautiful and green.
That sound you hear is my time machine letting me know it's time to return to our own world.
This is your talk, WCGO.
Hang on.
Oh, of course, this is the perfect song to bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. Rick, good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, Mike. How are you? And good morning to you, Peg.
Good morning, Rick.
And, of course, Rick is a real fan of...
Oh, science?
I can't make it work.
Actually, I heard the song Weird Science last night. I was thinking we should pull that one in here, too.
Oh, this I had the wrong fader up.
Uh-oh.
Wait, Weird Science, wasn't that like one of those weird kid movies?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it was a song from the 80s. It was on
right.
Weird Science 80s. was a film.
And it was a song.
Yeah. That's right. And it,
song
it was,
and a film, yeah.
And a breakfast treat as well, I believe.
Breakfast treat.
Hey,
oh my God, you did that. You did that, you know, little PSA about, you know, what not to put in your recycling thing.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I dumped out a whole bunch of stuff last night that was just like that.
Probably the pizza boxes, right? You know, and that.
I know. I'm terrible about that.
Actually,
all are, right?
That's kind of confusing though, because the outside pizza box is just fine because that doesn't get grease on it. They're talking about the little cardboard plate that the pizza sits on, and even that most of the time only has a couple of specks of grease on it.
And if my dog like chews all the pizza off of there, can I put it in the bin?
If there's enough pizza for your dog to chew it off, I would say no.
I like that. And then, Peggy, if you think about it, now we figured out how to have animals part of the recycling plan, right? That's good.
You know, we're just trying. You know, Carl Zimmering is still in the studio, and we were talking about that PSA that I put together, and it's part of that education. People need to know what they can put in and what they can't put in their recycling containers.
And you said no light bulbs, right?
No light bulbs. Carl, your mic is live. Go ahead.
Toxins.
Yeah, that's the key word, especially fluorescence.
But all of them. But yeah, fluorescents especially have mercury in them. That has consequences for the people at the recycling center. So please don't put the light bulbs in.
And right now it's weird because we're at a point where, you know, pretty much everything is single stream, meaning you throw it all in together.
Parts is parts.
And some people are complaining that glass is a contaminant because it breaks. Well, now you're going to tell us we can't put glass in after we spent decades trying to convince people how to single stream recycle? Stop making it confusing. This is what I keep telling folks.
Thanks, Coca-Cola.
Why?
Because they made the glass in the first place and made it. Like, oh, we got to recycle all this stuff. Yeah, let the city sort it out. And our city's so good at that.
Oh,
Chicago.
Yeah. Anyway.
This sounds like the Au Naturel PSA. The other one was...
Exactly.
The other one sounded too contrived. This one is better.
We hear a rumor that you might be doing some TV.
Yeah, I just came back from WFLD TV. I was down there from about 6:30 to about just 15, 20 minutes ago. So I was doing some training, and I'm going to be doing some fill-in work. And you'll see my smiling face tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock.
Awesome. I'm going to tune in.
You're going to turn into Fox?
They'll turn into Fox. It has nothing to do with the national
news.
That's
right. It's very different. It's very different.
The national news, I like to call it FAUX news. this is local news.
I got to wonder, Rick, have the local Fox people ever heard you on my show?
I mean, you know what, we're all kind of, you know, in that same kind of media coup, so to say. But it was nice. I mean, when I got the call on Tuesday, Matt Piacenza, who's the news director, who's highly regarded as probably one of the best they've had there in about 10 years, called me up Tuesday and said, we need some help, some fill-in between now and the end of June. Can you help us out? I go, sure. He goes, when? He goes, how about Sunday? And I was like this Sunday? He goes, yeah. I go, well, I kind of need to come in and learn the system. But, you know, it's not so much that. It's just, you know, it's getting your timing down. It's knowing how not to say too many things, which I tend to do. But, you know, everybody on from a weather standpoint, you know, the old adage or the old saying is how many seconds are in a weatherman's minute. And it's always more than 60. So you always have to try to figure out how to, you know, condense and slow down stuff. And then clearly, you know, you have to make sure that you're getting a point across to people. And one of the things that we were talking about this morning, myself and Mark Strail, and it's kind of funny because I hired Mark Strail 14 years ago to replace Harry Volkman. He stayed around, I left, and now he's training me. And it's always important that in that field, even though the door opens and you're exited out, you always remain professional because you never know when the door will open up again and the people that you may have been, you know, unhappy with may rehire you back. So I've always learned you always got to take the high road on that, and it'll be exciting. So I'll be on, I think again on Wednesday at noon, and then a couple of the days, you know, working the early mornings on Saturday and Sunday, and then the evenings Saturday and Sunday as well. So I got a busy next 2.5 to 3 months ahead of me.
Do me a favor, send me the times you're going to be on, and we'll post them, and we'll get the DeMaio bump going for Fox, local Fox this week. All right, we better get the weather pretty quick. We've had lots of rain. We're in April. We're in spring.
Weird yellow orb out there today. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. You talk about that, Peg. The sun is up, and we'll notice warm today. So low 50s inland, mid 40s along the lake. There'll be some more rain coming back at us probably late tomorrow night and into Monday. But we finished up a couple of days ago with the wettest March rainfall, and I believe over 30 or 40 years. I forgot exactly when the last time we had that much rain in one day. But if you think about it, guys, since the 1st of January, we've had almost 9 to 10 inches of rain.
Wow.
Which is a lot. And you know what I noticed? Coming home, Grant Park, all of the parks, field areas, right along Lake Michigan, are unusually green for this time of year. Have you both noticed that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. My own yard is greening up very quickly.
Yeah, and part of that is obviously the wet weather that we have, but also the ground temperature is very, very warm. So, Mike, just quickly tell me, how much time do we have left?
You got 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
Okay. We've got enough time here. And I think part of that is normally this time of the year, your ground temperatures are probably close to like 33, 34 degrees. But they're running almost in the low 40s in some areas. So we're probably going to see, once it does get warm and a lot of sun, things just absolutely explode. However, the pattern, even though it turns nice and sunny, well, it's sunny today, clouds tomorrow, some rain on Monday, sun on Tuesday with temperatures close to 60, but then probably a very wet day on Wednesday with showers, maybe in a couple of thunderstorms, and mid-60s. We turn very cool around here. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we're going to go back into the 40s. We could even see a little bit of rain mixed with snow around here Thursday into Friday, and that's probably not something you want to hear, is it?
I'm just rolling with it at this point. It's whatever it is, and I'm just being really patient. One of the things I would tell people, with as much rain as we have, the ground is still cool. Don't go out there compacting your soil yet. It's too early. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to think about, and this is a tip from Logic Lawn Care, our new sponsor. Don't core aerate right now. It's too wet. Your turf is not actively growing. But I did want to ask you one question about Northeast, and they're having a snowstorm. And I'm wondering if this is a Russian plot. Is this a Putin thing that's happening?
I feel like this is like a Get Smart episode of chaos.
We need a congressional investigation, I think, into this snowstorm.
I don't even know about that.
Okay.
All
right.
On that note,
Mr. DeMaio, like I said, send me your schedule. We'll post it. We'll get you some social media love.
Sounds good, and I'll talk to you again next Saturday.
All right. Thanks,
bye, Rick.
Bye. Thank everybody for being on the show today. And hey, everybody, is Rick DeMaio and that guy sitting over there, Carl Zimring. Again, pick up a copy of his book, Aluminum Upcycled Sustainable Design in Historical Perspective. You're going to learn more about aluminum.
And
then
get a ticket for
Chicago Humanities Festival on April 29th.
All right. Noon, so I'm a lunchtime talker of trash.
Until next week, go green or
go home.
Stadler?
Yeah, what?
Is that it?
Yes, it's over. How'd you like it?
I don't know. I slept through the whole thing.
Well, you didn't miss much.
Have you ever started vegetable seeds indoors and imagined the lush, gorgeous seedlings you'd plant in your garden, just to be disappointed with the straggly, small plants that actually grew? You're a candidate for the Happy Leaf LED Grow Light. It's 5 times more powerful than a T5 fluorescent bulb. T5s only start seeds and support some growth. But the Happy Leaf Light is an all-purpose LED with precisely tuned red and blue spectrums that allows the full range of plant growth. But if it's so good, why is it priced at just over $100? Well, selling directly to consumers allows Happy Leaf to price this within reach of the serious gardener who's seen grow lights that cost several hundred dollars. With the Happy Leaf LED, say goodbye to spindly tomato stalks forever and say hello to strong, lush plants that will make you the envy of the neighborhood. Find out more about Happy Leaf LED Light at happyleafled.com or call 815-414-2209. Happy Leaf, it's about the light.